Welcome to Conversations with Leaders on Tremendous Life Radio, providing some of today's most influential and inspiring leaders a platform to share their stories of growing up, what happened, and what they're doing today. Now, here's your host, Todd Weaver.
Welcome, everybody, to WEB Radio. Hey, we have a special guest. We have Mr. Tom Ziegler. He's the CEO of Ziegler Incorporated and the proud son of the legendary Zig Ziegler. Tom, thank you very much for giving us the time and being on the show.
Hey, Todd, what a blessing to be here. I sure appreciate it.
Well, we were looking forward to hearing your story. You graced us with your time, so we're going to try to make the best of it. I'd like to get the backstory kind of on our guests, if you can. Tell us about some of the early years growing up, early memories growing up in the Ziegler home.
Oh, you bet. Well, first off, I'm the favorite son, meaning I'm the only son. And my sisters are, my closest sister, Julie, is 10 years older than me. Actually, just 9 and a half, but I always round up. And so when I was born, they call me Mac for middle-aged carelessness. So I came a little bit later. And the interesting thing is that Dad really hit his stride starting in the early 70s. And I was, I'm 48 now. So when I was 7 or 8 years old, that's when Dad really took off. And my sister Julie had already moved out. She moved out of the house when she was 18. So I was kind of raised like an only child after that. And so the cool thing is that when Dad got to go on big trips, you know, overseas to Australia or Africa or something like that, I got to go with him.
Oh, nice. So,
the early days were a lot of fun. Dad did travel a lot, but every time he was in town, he took me to school, and he was always at my games when he was in town, and he was always there for the weekends. So, you know, it was really good. Nothing negative stands out in my childhood. It was just all good stuff.
Well, what about, I'm just curious to know, Tom, what about like some of the inside stuff, you know, early on? I mean, did you really realize how larger than life your father was, or how did you come to sense that in terms of that?
Well, there was a couple of occasions where it kind of stuck into my head. Of course, you know, high school, I really didn't understand it. I knew that he would speak and there'd be a lot of people there. The book See at the Top came out in 1974. And then, so that really kind of put him on the map. And then 1984, the book Secrets of Clothes and the Sale came out. And I remember this. I remember going to Washington, D.C., and this would be the year after I graduated from high school, or it could have been right around the time I was graduating from high school. We went to a bookseller's convention, so the book was being announced, and at that same time, Rosalind Carter came out with the book. And so I remember going to this big hotel downtown Washington, and we're going inside to do all this stuff with the, you know, with the big party to launch the book. And this limousine pulls up, and this guy in dark glasses gets out. He opens the door. He looks both directions, and then he closes the door. The limousine leaves, and then about 10 seconds later, a second limousine pulls up, and that's when, you know, the first lady, the former first lady, steps out of the car. And that was pretty cool because they, you know, she had a book and Dad had a book, and I was like, hey, that's, you know, Dad's hanging out with you know, pretty high people here. So that's kind of an early memory. Then, of course, when we traveled overseas, he would always get the red carpet treatment. And so you knew Dad was special. He was always doing media interviews and things like that. But probably high school and just after high school is when I started to realize how popular he was.
From my own listening to that, you could have kind of went two different ways, probably. You know, maybe you could have quit or said, you know, never find your own way, or your own identity, or milk that out. Or I don't know if I'm being clear enough. It just, it's remarkable how you could have sorted that out.
No, you I went to just about, I went off to college, people who are blessed to be able to go to college. I went like most kids, I kind of knew what I wanted to do, but I wasn't real sure. Went to a really good school, made a lot of friends. And of course, what I studied in school isn't what I ended up doing. Mm-hmm. So I guess that puts me in the majority, right?
I would think.
I played college golf, and after I got out of college, I thought I was going to be a professional golfer. And I started traveling around the country playing a whole bunch of the big amateurs. They didn't really have a mini tour back then like they do now. They didn't have like a good development tour. They had mini tours, but there wasn't a lot of money to be made. And a lot of the players on those tours were really, really good players, but they had really bad mental games. And so my golf coach at the time, my instructor, was Hank Haney. And if you know anything about Hank Haney, he's the guy that worked with Tiger Woods for four or 5 years. And I tell people I was there in the early days helping Hank develop his system. So he got all his kinks out on me. I'm just teasing when I say that.
Just being useful, Tom.
Yeah. But I worked, and he did, he's an incredible instructor, and my swing at that point had been self-taught. So he kind of rebuilt my swing. And after I'd been doing that for a couple of years, I was getting better, but the progress, it just takes time. Golf, there's never a sure thing, and it takes a long time. And compared to today's youth, I started late. So after a couple of years, I said, Hank, how long is this going to take? And he said, if you really, really work hard at it, you'll know in 3 years whether you have what it takes. About that same time, I hurt my back playing, and I moved into sales at the company. And I really started loving sales. And so after I kind of fell in love with selling here at the company, and my back was hurt and realizing that I was playing with a lot of guys who ended up on tour, and I realized how good they were, I made the decision not to do golf. So the only thing I can say about that is that I gave it 100% while I was doing it. And I really thought I would regret go in a different direction, but I never have and never did, simply because I gave it 100% and I found something I love even more. So
that's cool. That's nice. I don't know, looking back on that, like we always do, I guess we can't really look forward, having grace to be able to look back. Do you think you kind of went in the golf world or away from what Zig was doing a little bit out of defiance or a way to find your own, to identify yourself? Do you see any of that?
No, not at all. In fact, Dad was a huge avid golfer.
Okay.
And so we spent our best times together on the golf course. And every time we played, I was pulling for him and he was pulling for me. And he would have loved for me to be successful as a professional golfer.
Nice.
And I would have loved that too. I got pretty good. But there's a difference between being pretty good and being the best local amateur versus what those guys do out on tour. I mean, the people who play a lot and know what it means to really hone your game. I mean, there's probably no tougher game out there than playing at the top level. So, but no, it wasn't defiance at all. It was, if anything, it was a father-son treat.
Nice. Well, I'm guessing in the home growing up with Zig and your mother as well, that I guess there were a lot of things imprinted on you and instilled upon you, things like, integrity and giving 100% and never quitting and positive thinking and all those words. That's kind of been not even by your choice as much as ingrained in, correct?
Yeah, it's always, that's just a fact of life growing up the way I did. And I mean, there was a number of memories around that. When I was a young kid, I was probably 11 or 12. And mom and dad were married 66 years.
Nice.
And, there was never one hint of any doubt that they didn't love each other and were always going to be there for each other. It was, dad was always treating mom like you wouldn't believe, opening her door and doing nice things for her. Mom was always doing little things for dad, to make his life easier. And so growing up as a a child, I never had a worry. And Dad asked me one time, he said, son, what do you like best about your parents? And I said, well, I can tell you the number one thing that I like best about you two is that you love each other. And I never have to worry about that. And that same day, one of my best friends, you know, he just found out that his parents were filing, you know, they were getting divorced. And so, you know, unfortunately, so many in our society, they live through that either as kids or they get divorced later on. And that's a very difficult thing for anyone to go through. So, you know, just such an advantage for me that I didn't have that disruption. I had two parents who were caring for each other and pulling for each other. And then that just created a great environment for me.
Yeah. Looking at that, did you recognize or you write it down, your gratitude for that at the time? Or is, again, looking back on that where you can see how valuable that was to you?
Well, I reckon, you know, throughout my life, I've recognized it. And on the gratitude thing, it's from time to time, I'll do 30 days of gratitude. Mm-hmm. And what I'll do is every morning, the first thing I get up every morning is I'll write three things I'm grateful for. And then the next day I'll write three more things. And the only rule is you can't say the same thing twice.
Good.
And I'm trying to, you know, it's your brain is kind of wired to protect you. You know, it's kind of, it looks out for danger. It looks out. And so, you know, to make sure that you don't get injured or hurt, it's kind of skeptical. It's kind of guarded. And so we really have to train our minds to look for the things we're grateful for. And the more we do that, the more we recognize it. I mean, the more you're grateful, the more you're grateful, the more things you'll be grateful for. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've been in a good position where being grateful for that has just been a constant for me.
That's nice. That, again, I'm the way it sounds to me, and I kind of would have guessed this, but it seems to me like you weren't predestined to take over and be CEO, and Zig didn't really push you in any one direction. Is that correct? It kind of, actually, it sounds to me like we're all very lucky that you hurt your back playing golf. You know.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, people ask, you know, did your dad want you to be a speaker or be a salesperson or to take over the company? And the only pressure, and I won't even call it pressure, I'll just call it encouragement. The only thing Dad ever told me is that he wanted two things. Whatever I decided to do, give it 100% effort and do it with 100% integrity. And so it wouldn't have mattered if I was a you know, a salesperson, a professional golfer, an artist, a teacher. You know, it wouldn't have mattered what I wanted to do as long as I'd followed those two things, be the best I can be and do it 100% integrity. And when you do that, you know, as a parent, I mean, what a great lesson that we encourage our kids not on the way they look or the smarts that they're born with, but we encourage them around their character qualities, because character qualities are really what give you the long-term sustainable success. They allow you to create a life that allows you to be, you know, healthy and successful in all areas.
I love the word character. I don't hear it that often. I've been called a character on occasion too, Tom. I'm not sure it's the same. I'm not sure it's exactly the same, but it is. It's so valuable. And I mean, we talk a lot on the show. The show's called Growing Up. And, you know, the imprinting that we get, the things we see or we believe we see, or the things we hear or we believe we hear, the messages right from the beginning. So what a blessing it is to be, you know, raised in a home where those things are talked about all the time and lived, you know, you could see it.
Absolutely. And, of course, I had maybe the best role model that anybody's ever had. At least in recent times, because Dad, boy, he made all of his decisions on character and with integrity.
Yeah. Again, getting back to that, when did you realize how huge he was? I mean, I'm imagining myself, you know, growing up with the guy and, you know, you see him in the shower or you catch him picking his nose or something. And that, I mean, to realize that millions and millions of people's lives have been positively affected by the guy that's sitting next to you or golfing with you. That must be a wild, to really a realization. I guess it's a slow process, huh?
Well, you know, there's kind of aha moments that happen. I remember early in my time at the company, I was traveling with Dad, and we went through the airport in Louisville, Kentucky. And, you know, which isn't, if you're going to Louisville, you know, you're, that's probably your final destination, or you're going somewhere close by to drive. You know, it's not a, it's not a main, you know, place that you stop. And so we checked in at the counter, and the gate agent acted like he knew him forever. And, you know, they were talking, and he remembered when he was, you know, through the airport in the past. And so now it's everywhere I travel, it's like I've got brothers and sisters, and it's because there's not just tens of thousands, but literally maybe millions of people who've heard him speak, who've listened to his tapes, his CDs, read his books. And of course, the thing they like about Dad is Dad was very transparent. He would, he would tell them his, you know, the mistakes that he made, the things that he could have done better, his successes, his failures. And when you do that, people identify with you. They like you, you know, because you're real. And so then he told a bunch of stories about me and my sisters. And so when I meet somebody, they know a lot about me, but I don't know anything.
I like that. What about, did you start out at the company at, I guess the words at the bottom, did you start out in the warehouse? You didn't just get a CEO position or a big chair, right?
Oh no, it was, my first year was in the warehouse, and then I moved over to production. We used to manufacture our own audio cassette tapes and our VHS tapes. And so I was involved in the duplication process and putting labels on the cassette tapes. And, you know, so I did that for 6 or 7 months. And then from there, I moved into sales. And then into seminar promotion, sales management, and then eventually became president.
Well, tell us about that process, if you can. What was going on inside of you that you knew this is what you wanted to do, that you could help people and bring value? And did you know it right away, or was it kind of a process there?
Well, that was a process, but I never will forget, Dad was speaking at an Amway event, and this is in the early 90s, and Amway was rocking and rolling in the early 90s. And at this event, he was the surprise guest speaker, and there was going to be about 20,000 people there. And so what they did at this facility is it was like a big basketball arena. And so they closed the arena, so they broke at like 5 o'clock or 4:30, and they emptied it out, and then they opened the doors back up at 7. And so between 5 and 7, we set up our product table. And so we had a huge product table, you know, it probably had 15 8-foot tables, you know, of just our product. And we had to put tablecloths over the product table, so that when people walked in, nobody could know, you know, who the speaker was, right? So this guy comes in, and, you know, he's dressed pretty plain. He's dressed kind of in work clothes. You know, they're well taken care of, but they're also worn, if you know what I mean. You can tell he's probably dressed up in his nicest thing to come to this. But they were work clothes. And he looked over, and he saw our product table, and the corner of the table revealed some product. And he said, is Mr. Ziegler going to be here? And I looked at him and I said, you know, I said, well, yes, he is, but don't tell anybody, you know, because nobody's supposed to know yet. You know, I had to cover that corner up on the table.
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's okay. Is he going to autograph books? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, where is he going to autograph? And I said, he's going to be right down here. And I showed him the table where Dad would be sitting. And he said, well, where is the line? And I said, well, it's almost 7 o'clock now, and Dad speaks at midnight, and he's not going to get done until 1 a.m. So the line's not even going to form until at least midnight because nobody knows he's there. And it's 7 p.m. and he said, well, I'm going to go ahead and get in line. So this guy goes and stands in line. And after about an hour, he's still standing there. So I'm like, I got to go find out this guy's story. So I start talking to him, and it turns out he was Hispanic. He was from Central America. And he told me kind of in, you know, it was good English, but it had a heavy accent. He said that a number of years before, he'd moved to the United States to follow, you know, to get the American dream. And he'd moved to Chicago to live with his brother. And when he was staying with his brother, he went to his brother and he said, I think if I learn English, I'll have a better chance of success here in the United States. And his brother handed him a book. And he said, if you learn to read this book in English, it'll teach you English and it will change your life. And so the guy got the book and he started reading it and he got a Spanish-English dictionary and he started translating as he went through it. And the guy was crying when he was telling me this. And he said, the book was See You at the Top. And when I moved to America, I was an alcoholic and my wife wanted to divorce me. And this was my chance, you know, to make it right. Well, he said, I read the book, I quit drinking, I got steady work, and I've been, you know, I've been doing better and better ever since. And because of your dad, my family's here, I'm on the track to success, I've got my life together. I was early 20s, and so I'm thinking, oh my gosh. It's not that people love Dad and applaud when he's on stage. It's that people's lives are being changed. That's when I got hooked into the business. You know, because when you get out of college, a lot of times your first job is just that survival job.
Sure.
You know, it's not necessarily what you always dreamed of doing, but it's what you need to do in order to, you know, pay the bills and, you know, start to live independently. And that's when everything changed in my mind about, hey, wait a second. You know, we're not in the training business. We're in the life-changing business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's huge, man. That's a great story, Tom, too. That's an awakening of sorts. Did you talk to anybody about that?
Oh, yeah. I tell that story frequently. When people say, you know, what was the thing that made you know you were in the right place?
Yeah, that's cool.
Course, now, I mean, we get it every day, but, you know, Dad, he passed away, got his promotion to heaven in November, and we put that announcement out on Facebook at that time, and we got 13,000 comments on that post. 13,000 people came and left not only, you know, condolences, but they left their Zig stories.
Yeah.
And one of the treats for me is I get to travel and I get to hear people's Zig story. So,
yeah, that's huge, man. That's priceless, really. It really is. That's, you know, when that happened, when that guy told you that story crying, did you go right home and talk to somebody about that, or you just processed that up? But you knew, I can hear it in your voice. You knew then that this is where you're supposed to be.
I told a lot of people that. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, absolutely. I can tell. I can tell you'll never forget it.
And then he stood in line. So he waits in line almost 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
He could have still been first if he'd come back an hour before, you know, hour before. But you could see it in his heart. You know, it was just complete gratitude.
Yeah.
And then Dad would see those people and he would be overwhelmed with gratitude. So.
Yeah, it's wild. That's a wild story. That's how the motivation, it continues to almost, it seems like it multiplies. It snowballs as you know, you take the risk, you get involved, you follow your dream and bring value to other people, and it just gets crazy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, what did, let's see, as you're moving forward and following along in your father's footsteps, well, or creating your own footsteps is really where you're going. How did you, did you seek counsel in and did you get involved with talking to your father about making decisions in the business or seeing how we're moving into the 20th, 21st country, or, you know, how did that all work?
Well, when you look at the reality of our company, you know, it's the times have changed. The world is much different, you know, between the internet and social media and texting and smartphones, the communications that we have, the way we relate to each other. But the things that really matter have stayed exactly the same. You know, we all have a longing for belonging. We all want friendships and relationships. We all want to be trusted and to trust somebody. You know, we want to be loved. We want to be treated with respect. We want to feel like what we do matters. We want to feel like we have purpose. And so I know I can never be dad. I mean, there's only one Zig Ziglar.
Sure.
And you can be a great you, but a pretty bad anybody else, right? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so my calling is very similar to dad's, but the way I carry it out has got to be unique to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I love bringing truth and life-changing information to people in a way that they want to engage in it. They want to embrace it. They want to try it. And then they get to see the results.
Mm-hmm.
There's the greatest joy you can have is when you help somebody else reach a level they never thought possible. You know, if it's helping them repair a relationship or climb the corporate ladder or start their own business or whatever it is. And all of us as people, we can do that, you know, right where we are. We can help our kids. We can help our friends. We can help people we meet at church in the community. We can all do that. The question is what's our focus? You know, are we self-focused where it's all about us all the time? Or are we focused on helping those that we love? And, you know, Dad was such a great role model because he realized that once he started focus on everybody else, the things that he wanted came naturally.
Yeah, that's that famous quote, right? We can have everything in life we want if we'll just help enough other people get what they want.
Right. And so the trick is, you know, there's a couple of, you know, don't be another Zig Ziglar. There was only one. So you got to be yourself.
Yes.
And then don't settle for being yourself. You need to be the best version of yourself possible. I mean, we all have so much capability within ourselves, and we've got to stretch that. We've got to grow. We've got to go to the next, you know, we've got to continually learn and go to the next level and prepare. A recent thing that happened to me is when I was a kid, Dad would come home from a trip. And he'd come through the door, and you could tell he was physically tired. But he had this huge smile on his face every time he walked in. And I'd be like, how come Dad's always smiling? Well, now the last year and a half, I've been speaking. And I trust me, I never thought I'd be speaking. That was the farthest thing from my mind. But I'm going out and speaking, you know, almost every week I'm somewhere doing something. And about a month ago, I come home and I'm physically exhausted, but I walk through the door and I'm smiling. And I thought, wow, that's just like Dad used to come home. So I started thinking about it and I realized why. Okay, here's why. Dad always was smiling after he, you know, when he come back, because number one, he spent all day, every day, almost when he was working, preparing material to help someone else be the best they could be, right? So when you're studying that kind of material, guess what? You're reading it, having an impact on it. And then he would go out and he would speak it. You know, he would take all that information and he'd put it into his talk. Well, when you speak something, you hear it yourself, right? So he would hear it again. And then when he got done, people would come up to him and they would tell him what an impact he had on them. And so he was getting that positive feedback. Well, my goodness, of course you're going to be smiling all the time if that's how you spend your time.
I love it.
I'll learn a lesson. It doesn't matter what you're doing. If you spend time learning every single day how you can better help other people, well, you're going to get helped in the process. And then if you take the time to actually speak to someone and give them ideas on how they can improve, then they're going to come back to you and thank you for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what a great it doesn't matter what you do, you can do that. And so I'm just blessed to you know, follow in Dad's footprints. Because everywhere I go, it's an open door.
Yeah, absolutely. It's remarkable you were touched on that. To relate here, even to the radio show, Tom, me researching guests and reading what they're doing, it's kind of subtle. It kind of tricked me, but it gets in there. I spend my time, you know, that's a wonderful thing. This you described.
Yeah, I have one of my own quotes, and my quote is, "What you feed your mind determines your appetite."
Mm-hmm. And that's so true. I know in my life, and I'm sure it is in everybody else's too.
I can tell you it's literal and it's figurative, because I battled a weight problem most of my life. And when I changed what I put into my mind, as far as, I started studying nutrition and things that are good to eat and things that aren't so good to eat. And once I started focusing on health, my appetite for the bad stuff went away.
Yeah.
I don't want it anymore.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I've read that before. And I've tried it myself. Tom, I'm embarrassed to tell you, I would never eat fruit or vegetables ever for years. And I started eating fruit and vegetable, and I get more, I'm more hungry for fruit and vegetables.
Yeah.
That's a remark. It seems so simple. It seems kind of embarrassing to say that, but that's just the way it has been for me. I find it remarkable that you recognize that this is what you wanted to do, help other people, and yet you recognize that you are you. You aren't Mr. Ziegler, you're Tom Ziegler, you're Zig Ziegler, and that you have your own personality and your own – that's – you sorted that out pretty quick, huh?
Well, pretty quick, but, it was only about 4 years ago when I actually started feeling comfortable speaking. Mm-hmm. And 4 years ago, the switch that I had was, you see, I thought people would think that I should go on stage and have Dad's style. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, wait, nobody was telling me that. That's what I thought.
Right.
And as soon as I thought, okay, since nobody's telling me, why am I telling myself that? So I quit telling myself that. And then it was like, well, I'm just going to be myself. And just turned.
What a revelation. Huh? You're free, right?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Let me just make sure that everybody hears that. So my responsibility is to be the best version of myself possible.
Right.
So that means that I need to prepare just as much as Dad ever prepared. It means I need to know the audience as well as I can. It means I need to practice and rehearse and do all the steps necessary to deliver the best I can. It just means that when I go out there, I'm myself. I'm not running around on stage and kneeling down and being this, mimicking the style of Dad.
Yeah.
I sure want to honor his character qualities, though.
For sure. Well, they've been imprinted on you. I don't know if you could have ignored them. So that's a beautiful thing. You are you, and you still carry the message. I guess if you were to continue to set the bar that high in your own mind, you would always be uncomfortable and never be the best version of you. You tell yourself you're not good enough because you're not like somebody else, correct?
Right. Yeah. And one of the things that I learned from Dad is people would say, well, how come? Because as you know, Dad was a strong Christian and he always talked about God. He never really preached in a way that made people uncomfortable, but he never hesitated to share his faith. And people would always wonder, how can he go on stage and be so bold and yet not be offensive?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is Dad, when he went out to speak, there was only one person who he was trying to please. And it wasn't himself. It wasn't the man or the woman paying his check, his honorarium. It wasn't even the people in the audience that he was trying to please. And who he was trying to please was God. And so he knew in that relationship with God that his only responsibility was to give it 100% and share the truth in love. As a Christ follower, that's our responsibility, to share the truth and love. What people do with it, how they respond to it, that's up to them. We have no control over that. And when you release that need to, you know, to for the control, or when you release the need for applause or any of that stuff, it's so freeing. And people love you even more because they know you're transparent. You're just sharing your heart.
Right. And that cuts through everything, correct, Tom? I mean, that way you can just be you, and you're not telling anybody what to do. You're sharing your story, your joy, and what you do, your own experience. And then there's really no debate, correct?
Exactly. And so when I go and speak, you know, I talk a lot about faith as well. And, you know, I do it in you know, hopefully the same way that Dad did, which is, hey, the reason that my life has gone so well is because there's a lot of things I believe that are time tested and true. And one of them just happens to be my faith. And so sometimes I'll ask the crowd if it's a little bit of a crowd, you know, a business crowd, or maybe a crowd that may not think it's appropriate to talk about faith. They all love Dad. They all want to hear Zig stories. So I will say, how many of you here today want me to share with you 50% of the reason that my dad was successful, or 100% of the reason? And of course, everybody wants 100%. To be quite honest, if I went to a big seminar and the speaker was an expert in their category and they were devout in another faith, and they gave that practice, you know, part of the credit for why they were successful, you know, I would be disappointed if they didn't give it credit.
Sure.
I want to know. So that's, you know, that's a little, you know, just something that just comes natural to me. It doesn't seem like I'm taking a risk, because the risk is not being yourself.
Sure.
Right. What if people like the person you're not? Well, then you're like in a really big jam, because now you can take it all the time.
That's remarkable. That's good. And also, there's no risk if you're sharing what you know to be the truth.
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
isn't that what integrity really is all about? Living and knowing for yourself your truth, the truth.
Yep. And, you know, part of that key for me, which is very liberating, is when you go home and you say, how did I do on that event? Well, did I prepare as well as I could? You know, in other words, everything that's in my control is what I focus on. And number two, that I share the truth and love. And if I pass those two things, then I've done all I can. So I can't get upset if the PowerPoint didn't work, or if I learned out after the fact that I should have included something, because you don't know what you don't know, right?
Absolutely.
But if you can't look in the mirror and say, hey, I gave it 100%, I prepared as much as I could, or, you know, I didn't come across with the right attitude, the right character, you know, that's when you got real concerns.
Yeah. Hey, Tom, what's going on at Ziegler Incorporated? I mean, what are you guys, a typical day, or what are you guys focusing on, or the number of things? Tell us about that.
Oh, man, we got like a gazillion things. we just put out a new webpage, website last week, and it's like giving birth. You know, it's this beautiful creature that's coming into the world, but man, it's crying right now. It needs a lot of attention. It's getting a little bit better every day. And we've kind of changed our thinking. It's not a website like a catalog. We call it an engagement platform. And so the idea is in the category of personal development and success, you know, when people want ideas on how to be more successful, we want them to think, oh, I'm going to go to Ziegler and see what they have, because we have, you know, we're putting a whole bunch of articles of, you know, of inspiration and motivation and success and sales and business on the front page, so that people who want to learn and grow, our engagement platform is the place to go.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we have a great deal of retail products and online learning that we sell. We have a speakers bureau. We speak all over the country and really all over the world, delivering our message. And in the corporate world, we do a lot of sales training and presentation skills. And then a little over a year ago, we launched an area where we're doing small business coaching. So we work with small business owners to help them systematize their business. And that keeps me on the road a lot. In fact, I'll be leaving for Chicago on Wednesday to do another event out there. But I'm doing like probably 35 events around that every year, where we work with small business owners. So that's a brief overview, but all of it's at Ziglar.com, so you can see it there. So if anybody goes to that off of this, just remember that the website is changing every day right now as we get this baby home from the hospital.
I'm sure the baby's going to grow up just fine. I'm sure of that. So, hey, when you're traveling all around, you sound really busy, but you get to golf sometimes, don't you?
Well, in the last year, I've actually been able to take my clubs one time. So,
is that right?
Yeah, I need to make that part of the package. Huh?
Well, I don't know what you need to do. I just threw it out there. That's all.
Yeah.
What the percentages in without an actual number? I'm just curious. Is it spread fairly equally between corporate training and the personal development and the small business stuff, or how does that work out?
As a company, it's about a third. It's about a third corporate development. What I call larger company training, where we're going in and working with their sales team or teaching their people presentation skills, how to be effective communicators, how to give a good speech. And then about a third of it's personal development, which could be CDs, DVDs, books, online learning. And then about a third of it is now our small business training that we do for small business.
Nice. Well, I'm sure your father, I mean, he worked hard at doing what he loved and bringing the message to the masses, and the business has certainly grown. I'm sure he's happy with the way things are going, or maybe that's a little arrogant on my part, but I'm willing to venture that that's the case and things keep moving forward. The message is basically the same, whether you're talking to, am I right in that, whether you're talking to a corporate 20 guys in a room in corporate America, or whether you're talking to one guy. The message is the same, correct?
Yeah, and all of our training, it doesn't matter what it is based on this. We talk about will and skill. Skill is the process, the technique, the how-to. So when you think of training, like presentation skills, sales training, leadership, management, there's a bunch of time spent on doing the right thing in the right way. How to close the sale, how to ask great questions, moving somebody through the sales process. The will is the heart, the attitude, the desire, the passion, the character, the want to. And that's where we stand out. That's where we feel like we're the best in the world. And what we know for a fact is that unless somebody has the right character core, the right character foundations of honesty and integrity and character and loyalty and love and, all those different character qualities. Unless you have that, you can put all the skills you want. And if you put it on the wrong person, if those character qualities aren't there, eventually it's going to come tumbling down. And that's what the newspaper headlines are filled with. I mean, Tiger Woods, probably the most gifted physically and from a mental focus person, maybe one of the best athletes ever. But character mistakes, took 3 or 4 years out of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? He still hasn't gotten all the way back. Lance Armstrong. I mean, nobody's going to argue that he was perhaps the greatest cyclist that ever lived, except for now they will argue it because of his character issues that got in the way. And so we focus all the time on become the right person first and the skills to it.
Well,
because skills are fairly easy to learn, but character is what – that's your character and your integrity. That's your moral and ethical filter through which you make difficult decisions.
Mm-hmm. This could probably be a whole other show, so I don't want to ham you up on it too much, but say, just as an example, you're in a boardroom meeting with some salespeople in corporate America, and you sense, because you know or you can tell, that there's not a willingness or a desire to possibly change the character. What do you do? How do you help somebody pass that?
Yeah. Well, rephrasing that a little bit, sometimes companies or, you know, buyers, they'll ask us, have you ever put this program into a company and it didn't work? And unfortunately, the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
We have done sales training for a company that didn't work. And of course, then the question is, well, why didn't it work? Well, it's easy. We teach a character, moral, and ethics-based approach. You know, you can have everything in life you want if you help enough other people get what they want. You do it for their benefit, not yours. Right? You're helping somebody make a decision that benefits them. You're not selling something so you can win and they lose. Right? It's got to be a win-win. And so if we come in and teach that, it's going to resonate. Okay, people in the organization are going to go, wow, this is great. This is exactly what I'm looking for. But then what happens is they see people in leadership making decisions contrary to what that program teaches.
Mm-hmm.
And then they automatically think, well, the boss doesn't think it's important, so I don't think it's important either.
Yeah.
Because people are quick to do whatever the boss says.
Right.
And so then people say, well, why do good people leave a company? Well, I can tell you why. If you define a good person, a good employee, as someone who works hard and has a lot of integrity, if they work in a place where there's a shortage of integrity, in order to keep their integrity, they've got to do one of two things. They've either got to address the issue in the appropriate way and try to improve the integrity level where they're working, or they got to leave.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't stay with doing nothing. And of course, if they're low on the totem pole, that means they probably leave.
Yeah. So. Have you ever seen that maybe a trickle up effect? Were enough of maybe some of the lower scale employees were so committed to being more positive and living the right way and working the right way that it kind of affected the upper, or that doesn't happen often, maybe, huh?
Yeah, we've seen it. It's just much more difficult.
Yeah.
Dad tells a story, and this is played out every single day in business. Early in Dad's career, he was a sales manager, and the company asked him to take over a territory. And when he got to this territory, there was the top dog salesperson in that territory. And this guy kind of ruled the roost, you know? I mean, he was the big revenue center. He was selling two or three times more than anybody else, but he also had an integrity problem. The problem was nobody in leadership would confront him because he meant, you know, so much to the organization as far as revenue. You know, it's like, oh, we'll look the other way because the guy's selling, right?
Right.
Well, Dad gets in there, and it becomes real apparent what the issue is, and Dad fires him. And then 2 weeks later, a new guy comes on, and this guy that Dad brought on ended up setting the records in sales for the company. In other words, he wasn't just the best salesman in that territory. He was the best salesman in the whole company, which had thousands of salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
That guy came to Dad later and he said, you know, Zig, I never would have come to work for this company as long as that other guy was still working here.
Mm-hmm.
I would never work for a company that would hire somebody that would have an employee with that low of an integrity. So the only reason Dad was able to bring on this guy of high integrity was because he was willing to do the right thing and let the guy go with low integrity, even though on paper it looked like that was a bad financial move.
Right.
It might financially be tough for a short time, but you always win when you improve the integrity level of your organization.
Well, without your father's integrity level at the time, that must have been, even then, it must have been a very challenging, you have to have some courage and some integrity yourself to make those changes. He had to take some heat, or I would guess, from anybody that was above him saying, what are you doing? Like you said, on paper, that's like suicide. It's hard to stand your ground in what you really believe in.
Yeah. So, but the thing is if you're willing to make those tough decisions on integrity, word gets around, and then people with integrity will seek you out.
It's a wonderful thing. Sometimes I'm not sure if I'm courageous enough. I dig deep in those cases, and I try to do the right thing most of the time anyway. So, but you've learned all that from watching and hearing the stories and living it yourself, right? You've practically applied these things into your life, so you know that it works. You know.
Yeah. And I've seen God bless Dad's decisions and our decisions over and over again. So we got too many memories, too many things to be grateful for to turn back.
Absolutely. So everybody can follow and contact. They can get the what's going on at Ziegler Incorporated, right? Ziegler.com, correct?
Ziegler.com. We have a newsletter there that is free. There's a couple of downloads that are free that go with it. So if you want a good dad audio program to listen to, you can get it there. We have the Zig Ziglar fan page on Facebook. And we have great quotes and posters that we put up there all the time, every single day. And I'm on Tom Ziegler, at Tom Ziegler on Twitter. So a lot of ways to get engaged and follow us.
I want to thank you, of course. Also, Laurie. Laurie was with your father for a long time. Is that correct?
Yeah, she'll be celebrating 36 years as a member.
That's beautiful. I wanted to throw a little plug out that. That's just remarkable. It's inspiring, and it's a great thing. It also speaks volumes for what's going on at Ziegler Incorporated, you know, with any kind of transition and changes. And I got to communicate with her. And she was just very gracious and forthcoming. And we really, really appreciate that, you know, accessibility to people.
Yeah, well, Todd, I'll tell you that when I was in high school, Laurie was grading my papers. So I'm not sure she likes for me to mention that, but yeah. She's been making me better for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what's so cool. And it is, you know, making good choices, keeping positive and people around me just changes me and almost in spite of me. I don't fight it so much anymore, but it's just the people we surround ourselves with. Tracy Jones says it from Charlie Tremendous Jones. The books we read and the people we are around is what defines us, you know?
Yeah. I was with Ken Blanchard last week, and we just told Charlie Tremendous Jones stories to each other. So, you know, there's another man with an incredible legacy, an amazing amount of wisdom, and he's right. You know, Dad's quote is you are what you are and where you are because of what's gone into your mind. And you can change what you are and you can change where you are by changing what goes into your mind. And that's where the whole idea of books and reading and listening changes everything. I'm a little simpler than that. I shortened that down. I just said what you feed your mind determines your appetite.
Right, right. It's so cool. So, I mean, it really is. And it's such a joy to change. It's scary at first when I'd start looking and thinking, maybe I want to be a better version of me. And, you know, and even working with guys today, I err on the side of caution as far as not telling everybody I meet you need to change, because that kind of gives a message of you're not good enough the way you are, you know. But when people are willing and start seeking it out, I love to share what's happening to me. You can't shut me up. I love talking about what I do and because it makes my life better.
Right.
All right. Well,
what about that,
Tom, what would you leave the listeners with? A final Ziegler parting shot.
Okay. Well, I think here are the two most important questions that you'll ever ask and answer. Well, one's a question and then one's a decision. So the most important question you'll ever ask yourself is, who do you want to be? Who do you want to become? And so you need to sit down and define it. And this is character related. What are the character qualities? What's the legacy you want to be known for? You know, we're talking about honesty and integrity and character and loyalty and love and trust. And, you know, who do you want to become? And so if you can spend time answering that, what are the qualities that you want to define you as a person? That's the most important question you'll ever answer. the most important action you'll ever take is to then immediately begin to put into your mind the things that will allow you to become that person.
I wish it was more
complicated, but the reality is what percentage would you say? I think it's like close to 97% of the people never sit right down and say, this is who I want to become.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad talks about it. He talked about it his whole life. It's called the be, do, have philosophy. You've got to be before you can do, and you got to do before you can have. Well, the be part is being the right kind of person, determining who you want to be. But our culture is a have and do philosophy. You know, it's a have and do culture. Mm-hmm. I want to have this. I want to have that. Therefore, I've got to do this and do that. Well, then you get Lance Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wants to have fame and fortune and yellow jerseys. Therefore, I've got to do whatever it takes to win.
Right.
And then you lose everything. Well, there's a guy who works for us. His name is Philip Hatfield. He was in a motorcycle accident, nearly died, lost his leg. He no longer had his wealth because he spent everything getting well, mm-hmm. and he no longer could do the job he used to do. But because he was the right kind of person, his B was right. He's making a difference, changing lives, having more fun than he's ever had.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. We got to get our ducks in a row, right?
You can't take away the B. The world can take away everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
Tom, it's been remarkable. Really, a pleasure, an honor, really, to have you on the show. I enjoy it so much, and I've been looking at following along what you've been doing, and like-minded, and you're just doing a remarkable job. I just hope you continue to follow your own footsteps or create your own footsteps as you go.
Awesome. Thank you. What a delight to be here. And I wish you the best, and thanks for thinking of me.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure. It truly has been a pleasure and honor, Tom. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.
All right. You too.